enterprising in my surroundings. I'm finding the quietest of states these days. Just representation of storm brewing. Amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change.
Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. You might have heard that. I'm sitting here with my dog on my lap recording the intro. Now she's got the puppy snuggles, and you just can't let them go. So, dog, Sandy, you're with me on this one. Today's episode is a lot of fun, as it always is, right? We got Jess Mena on the call. It's always a great time. Today we're talking about plantar fasciitis, all things plantar fasciitis. If you've ever experienced it or you're experiencing it now, I apologize. That's too bad. However, if you've never experienced it, you're going to want to listen to, not just to boost my podcast numbers. I would never say that. I would never do that. I'm telling you because there are warning signs and you want to be aware of them. If not for you, that would be awesome. But we all know other runners too. So it's nice to know what the warning signs are just in case something comes up with someone we love and we can give them a little, hey, this is what you need to look out for. So before we get into it, I want to give a huge shout out to our sponsor today, Tannery. The sun is out. Summer is here, which means you need to protect yourself, right? The sunscreen is so important for me and for all of us. Tannery has three products that I use liberally. I got the sunscreen, we got the mineral cover, and the lip balm as well that has the SPF in there. Now, this is for runners, made by runners, which is huge, which means you get the coverage you want, but it doesn't run into your eyes. The only running is you, not your sunscreen, and the chemicals. This is a big thing for a lot of people. They worry about the chemicals that they put on their skin, and that's where Tannery comes up big. They are very, very conscious of this as well. So go over to tannery.com. That's T-A-N-R-I, like tanning in Rhode Island. Tannery. But they're not from Rhode Island. This is just me freestyling in the middle of an ad. I don't know why, but here we go. Tannery.com, tannery.com/rambling to save 10%. Also, when you support our sponsors, you support me. Why? Well, they want to come back and support the show, which I really appreciate. So let's get into it with Jess Mena. All right, we are back with Jess Mena. Of course, with our monthly podcast where we talk to Jess Mena about some ailments, some PT help. In addition to that, Jess has always been giving us kind of the lowdown on what she's doing over there in the LA running scene, Northern LA running scene as well. So we're gonna hint at that now. Some updates, some meets going on, some events happening. But as you probably already heard from the title of this podcast, we're gonna talk all about plantar fasciitis, as Chris McDougall called it in Born to Run, the vampire bite of running injuries. There are a lot of problems with that book. If we look at it now, you know, 10 or 15 years removed, but that one was right on the money. That is the perfect name for it. Jess, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I always love coming on here, talking about all sorts of stuff, and I'm ready for this topic.
That's right, because in the past we've talked about side stitches and we've talked about strength training. So we're hitting all angles, all different body parts. That is for sure. People who don't know, plantar fasciitis affects your feet. And this is my, we need to stop the podcast here because I've already learned a trick to diagnose somebody if they have plantar fasciitis. That is, if you ask them how to spell plantar fasciitis and they spell it correctly, they have it because it means they have spent a lot of time on the internet looking it up. It is a tricky word to spell. I know this because I typed it into my little Instagram today asking people if they had any questions and I misspelled it 17 times. Finally got it right, which proves that I haven't had plantar fasciitis yet, which I am very happy with. But just give us, let's talk generally first. What is plantar fasciitis? What is fasciitis? What is a plantar? What are these words?
Yeah, what is all the things, all these big words? Okay, plantar fasciitis, let's back up. The fascia, you have a lot of things going on in your foot. You have a very dense, fibrous, thick fascia that starts at your heel and it kind of runs all the way across your foot to the base of your toes, basically. And that's what you call the plantar fascia. And that thing, if you irritate it, you get micro tears, I'm sure it feels maybe like a vampire bite, like mentioned before. So
what is fascia? Is it only in your feet?
No, you have fascia running across your whole body. So I would almost describe it as like, think of a bodysuit. You have this whole layer of connective tissue that lines all of your muscles and your tendons across your whole body. And there's certain parts in your body where you have this fascia that becomes almost a little bit more tendinous in certain parts of your body, like your hands. You'll have a little bit more dense fascia in your hands when you're connecting tendons and ligaments, and same thing with your feet. Yeah, that's the plantar fascia or fascia.
All right. So it's the fascia in your feet and it's all connected. So all the fascia is kind of interconnected.
Super interconnected. And then if you, I always think back to our cadaver labs. I remember like, it's kind of gruesome, slicing someone's foot.
Yeah, kind of. A little bit.
Yeah. It's almost like the best way I could describe it. It's almost a sense like plasticky spider web. That's all ropey and connected. So fascia, if you irritate that, it's super innervated and sensitive, and it can really kind of halt your training. So super important to try to prevent it. And then I'm excited to talk about what we can do to help it if you do have plantar fasciitis.
Right. So fascia is thick, it's strong, it's durable. It helps us move around. So why would it get irritated in the first place? Like what could possibly be happening when someone's just jogging around? Even some people who are like not even like going out there and doing like super hard trail running where they're beating up their feet, or they're doing like these 50K road ultras and stuff like that. They're just going out there running 4 to 8 miles a day. How could this bother something that's so integral to the connective tissue and our body in total?
That is a great question. And I hate saying this, but it really depends. So I think the problem with plantar fascia or the fascia is that because it connects to your ankle joint and your toes, a lot of things go into play with what could possibly irritate and injure your fascia, right? So one, it's supposed to stretch and help absorb shock when you land. But if other things at play, for example, your big toe's too stiff, or your ankle's too stiff, or you have very flat feet and you overpronate, or you have high arches and your foot is really stiff, all those things can really affect the way that your fascia moves and tolerates the stress. I think it seems to be more probable like newer runners or newer athletes who are starting to put stress on their feet. And if you're not strong enough or you don't have the mobility for it, you know, the fascia is one of the first things that kind of suffers because it's not meant to do all the work, I guess. Yes, it helps absorb shock, but it shouldn't be the only thing helping you absorb shock. So that is the simplest answer to that question.
Got it. Okay. So it can happen in a variety of different ways. And one thing that seems to be a recurring theme for so many people who have fallen prey to this issue is that, unlike some other issues that sometimes come up, like, hey, I have an ankle sprain, or I have a little bit of IT band issue. Like this seems to be, that's a horrible example because IT band issues can linger. This is an issue. This is an injury that for a lot of people can linger for a long time. That can come back easily and reoccurring.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like that this can be not just a one-time issue that kind of once you get it, it almost becomes like a degenerative disease in a way. It just kind of lingers.
Yes, and it can be degenerative. So the thing that's more frustrating for people, especially active people, is when you get diagnosed and once you go to the doctor, it's gotten bad enough that you're going to the doctor, right? And at that point, it's like, okay, the tissue's inflamed. There's all these other things that have to be corrected. So I would say for the most part, for someone who is a really bad case of plantar fasciitis, they probably won't feel 100% at least 6 months from when it got really bad. But if you start, and the good thing about plantar fasciitis is that it comes on kind of gradual. So you'll start feeling like, oh, my heel is sore. Okay. When you feel the heel soreness, that's when you go, okay, if you fix everything and you do all the preventative work and you do all the stretching and the strengthening or whatever, you could probably get better in a few weeks. But once you have the sharp pain, you wake up in the morning, the first step, you have a stabbing pain in your heel, it lingers, gets a little bit better, and then it gets really achy at the end of the night. That's when you start thinking, uh-oh, this is going to take a few months.
Okay.
Or it could potentially take a few months.
All right, this is exactly where I was going. Okay, first signs of plantar fasciitis. Some people who are listening to this were like,
I've been down this road long enough, but some people who don't know a lot about plantar fascia, listening to this, they're just really listening to the podcast. They turn this on. They're like, "Yeah, I don't even know what this is, really." I hear people talking about it. So what are some of the first symptoms for plantar fasciitis for someone who's never experienced it before that they can maybe be on the lookout to see what's happening?
First signs is you're going to notice heel soreness, but mostly you'll notice it not on the outside of your heel or right in the center of your heel, but more on like the inside. We call the medial aspect of the heel. That's where the fascia originates from. You start feeling soreness there, like after a run, or you wake up in the morning and it's sore. That's when you start thinking, oh, this might be plantar fasciitis, and it might not be full blown. So that's probably the first thing that I will tell people. I'm like, if you're feeling soreness and it's not stopping you from running, you can still run, it goes away. But in the morning, or if you're, let's say you do a long run and you rest and you put your feet up and then you get up again and you feel that soreness, first sign, I would say heel soreness.
So why is it like, so both of these, obviously the common theme here is you're off your feet, you're relaxing, and then you're putting your feet back on the ground. Why would it pop up then?
If you look at, you read up on research and pathology of fascia, plantar fasciitis, it's a micro tear of the tissue. So you tear it, micro tear it, and then when you rest, it starts healing. So think of like a cut on your on your hand, you paper cut, right? You don't bother it, but if you stretch the skin, ouch, it kind of hurts. It's kind of the same concept, like the fascia will kind of relax, there's no pressure on it, so it kind of contracts again to its original form. You stretch it, you pull on something that's kind of hurt, and you're going to feel this soreness. Which is why people feel that the worst in the morning, if you have it really bad, is your feet generally are pointed, like if you're sleeping on your back or your stomach, your feet aren't pointed up, they're pointed down, so it kind of shortens the fascia. You take a huge step, stretches it really fast. If you have a lot of micro tears there, boom, sharp pain.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I'm envisioning like the former dancer who all of a sudden like hasn't danced in a while, wants to break it out at like the wedding reception, tries to do a split on the dance floor and immediately regrets it.
Exactly. Similar concept. Like you just lose that elasticity because sure you have inflammatory things going on in there. So you'll feel that sensation. But I do think if you have the soreness, good sign is you probably rehab yourself back rather quickly. Sharp pain in the morning that lingers, gets worse, goes away. And at the end of the day, it's worse. You're going to have a harder time going back to running in a timely fashion.
All right, let's go in order of problematic issues. Okay, so say someone gets exactly what you just described. They're like, hey, wow, all right, like I'm in that boat. I think, you know, I might have plantar fasciitis, or maybe someone who's had it in the past, all of a sudden they're experiencing it again. And they're like, oh God, they get like some sort of like PTSD flashback. And they're like, I'm just going to ignore it. Hopefully it's fine. What should they do when they start developing these early symptoms?
Okay. Off the bat, I think the classic thing that everyone will say, every doctor will say, right, is, are you stretching? Boom. If you're not stretching your calves, and you tend to have stiff ankles, that's one of the first things you should do, because if your ankle is stiff or your calf is stiff, you're not allowing your foot to roll off of your toe or allowing your ankle to bend as much. And so your body's going to compensate. If you can't roll off and you don't have adequate mobility, you're just going to put more stress on the fascia, which is on the bottom of your feet. So stretching for one is the safest thing, the best thing to do. Now, this is where it kind of gets tricky. So most people tend to know the shape of their foot, right? If you have high arches, you definitely most likely are stiff. If you have very flat feet, low arches, and you pronate a lot, yes, there might be a stiffness component. But for you guys, it most likely is an overstretching problem. So for people who have very flat feet, think about it. The fascia runs from your heel to your toe. Flat feet, you pronate, you're stretching it too much. So you actually, those people might need more strengthening and foot strengthening exercises. People who are very high arches, stiff foot, shortened fascia, probably need to stretch more.
Now, you mentioned before about big toe mobility. Now you talked about like the calf stretching and then, you know, some of the foot exercises as well. Where does this big toe stuff get into the mix? Like, I've never been like, I've heard of stretching before. part of this is playing dumb. I do know some of this stuff. I do my research, but I'm trying to like play along with someone who's like, who might be listening to this. This is the first time I heard any of this. Okay.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, hold on. So what am I supposed to do with my big toe? Well, this is a very specific body part.
Yes. Very specific. First sign is if you look down or you tend to have bunions and you have plantar fasciitis, you're probably someone that needs to stretch their toe. So I'm telling you, this can go 100 ways, but when stretching your toe is important for someone who has bunions, because that's the first sign that you do have a stiff ankle or you overpronate.
Okay.
Okay. Because now the anatomy of the foot changes. You're supposed to go heel, rock off of your big toe and bend. If you don't have that mobility, you're going to tend to turn out your feet, or you pronate. So you have a collapse and you're going to roll off the base of your big toe. So for people like that, I know, okay, they're not actually getting enough extension of their big toe. Okay. Again, so you're stressing the fascia, and stretching the big toe can help elongate the fascia that might be stiff for someone who has very high arches. And then someone who's, for example, a very low arch, you want to promote toe roll off, not midfoot roll off. So for both people, that might be important.
Interesting. So it seems like in either situation, a fascia problem is primarily an overcompensation issue.
Yes, 100%.
Okay. All right. And then depending on someone's body type and running style, that those things could be on completely different ends of the spectrum in terms of what's causing it. But the root of it is overcompensation.
Yes, absolutely. And it's always going to be, and you'll notice, with all of the repetitive injuries, it's always going to be an imbalance. You're either you're not flexible or not strong enough, either one or both of them, combination of. So with the feet, it's just a little bit more difficult, because it's not like when you strain like your shoulder, you can like avoid it and not use it and rest it. With your feet, you're walking on them all the time. So I think that's another factor of why it takes so long, is you cannot avoid, you know, using your feet.
All right, I'm going to go and throw some random stuff in there, because I'm going to talk about like some Matt Chittum things that have happened in the past, but they're also topical to this time of the year. And then we'll also get into some questions. A lot of people submitted questions over on Instagram stories, which were great. So thank you so much for that. And then also you can take this in wherever you want to go. You're the expert. I have noticed that, first of all, one of my feet is more likely to have this issue. I never had full-blown plantar fasciitis, but I've had like the early markers for it. Now, I had two things. I had a full diagnostic check with Dwayne Scotty, who's a running PT, who's great, his own awesome podcast. He lives near me, did a full 90-minute diagnostic thing with me like a year ago. And he's like, hey, your big toe mobility is not good. I'm like, yeah, this is not something I practice. Okay, fine. So he's like, well, this can lead to it, as you mentioned. So like, mm-hmm. When I wake up in the morning, this is one of the first things I do, is I do my little big toe mobility half lunge.
Great. Stretch, toe, right? Yoga. Great.
Toe yoga. There it is. See, mm-hmm. Yes. Really, mm-hmm. Talk about micro dosing my stretching here. But I have noticed that in the summer, I'm more likely to develop this issue because I'm wearing
sandals. Yep,
sandals. Sandals and flip-flops. Talk to me mm-hmm. about not running shoes, we'll get there, but just casual around the house shoes, or no shoes, or just, you know, bumping around the neighborhood, doing chores. How does footwear matter just in everyday life, non-running related? We'll get to the running part in a second.
Well, one, flip-flops, for one, you don't get enough stability, period. Two, when you're in flip-flops, your toes actually have to work harder, so they grasp and grip the sandal in order for them not to flop off of your foot. So if you have stiffness in your toe or ankle, you actually contract the fascia more, because you're actually using your toes more. So you grip more.
Yeah, you're doing like monkey feet.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if you'll notice, but a lot of people will say like, oh yeah, I feel burning under my toe when I'm walking in flip-flops for too long. It's because you have to like push your toe into the sandal to make sure that the what is it called? The thong part? Is that the right word?
It is, but you shouldn't be. You have thrown out some wild words in this podcast, and you're afraid to say thong?
Yeah. The thong of your sandal.
In previous episodes, I had my producer once ask me after an episode, like, are we going to bleep Jess, or there's too many swear words? Are we just going to put an explicit tag on it? Oh, like, let's just put an explicit tag on it. There's too many.
Oh, I know. I learned. I've toned it down, guys. I've toned it down. But yeah, I'm blushing. Oh my God, it's so funny. Yes. So anyways, so for the thong not to come off of your sandal, you are going to have to grip it. So around the house, I am a big proponent for barefoot walking because I think it allows your foot to naturally grip the ground and push off the ground and roll off the toes you're supposed to, unless you have, I mean, obvious foot deformity or some wild foot pain, you know, don't. But if you generally don't have pain, I'd say when you're at home, it's almost better to go walk around barefoot.
Okay.
Barefoot walking is great. Yeah. So that's my two take on sandals and like at home slippers. I mean, they're comfortable if you have, you know, metatarsalgia or like sore spots, great. But barefoot walking is great for your feet.
Okay. But sandals and slides, not great because you're gripping even more. And then if you have issues, so someone who is, all right, I'm dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
Should they go barefoot in the house? Should they do something else? How does it work for them?
No. And you know what? I think technology, thank God for modern day, that there's companies like UFOs. Is that what they're called? UFOs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the way that they do
this. We try to get them to sponsor this podcast, Jess. We're trying. We try to get like, this is, come on, UFOs.
UFOs. They've made their foot or their sandals enough that it contours your foot a lot better. So you actually do get support of your arch, your heel, right?
They're called a recovery sandal. They sponsor Mietekind's football podcast. Good for them. It's a great podcast. Mietekind's is great. Fantastic. UFOs, you know you want to get in the running. You're in for running.
Listen,
you're not there for football. You're in for running. Come on, sponsor the show. For goodness sake. The running
community would eat UFOs. I mean, if I could tell people, I'm like, instead of wearing your slides and your thongs, you need to get some UFOs. I have some. They're great.
No more thongs, only UFOs.
Yeah. I can't say that word. Oh, my God. Yes.
Deal. To be fair, my mom actually wears a pair, and she loves them.
See? I'm telling you.
Let me ask you this, though, because this has become an issue, and I've read it on other places, too, is how does age play a part? Not only a plantar fasciitis, but as you mentioned, the other pieces to the puzzle here that can cause plantar fasciitis. How does aging play a part, whether it's lower leg stuff, mobility stuff, flexibility, whatever, that may cause people or not cause people to develop any of these symptoms?
You know, I tell people, we're not like cars where we can change our parts, right? So, and unfortunately, as we age, a lot of things just, the elasticity, we lose elasticity, we get stiffer, we get weaker naturally. So I think the natural aging process just makes people stiffer and weaker. And so I always say the older you get, you actually need to work out more, stretch more, and be more involved with your health. Because if not, I mean, you're going to go down this road of, everyone's going to get there. And I think everyone's going to have arthritis. Everyone's going to develop degenerative tendon problems. So I do think age is a huge factor for people who tend, like if you're an athlete and you're older, you're just naturally going, you're more at risk for experiencing injuries.
I mean, it's like with everything, right? It's like with age, you have to be more conscious of all the stuff. Same thing with diet.
Everything.
With so many things. Like
everything.
Like you just have to be more conscious, more intentional by yourself. And, you know, obviously age is, you know, it was always going to be there. But as we've had people on this show many times, like it doesn't stop people if they do the right things. To peak later in life, especially if they're not a pro athlete who didn't peak at age 26. Right. Like most of the people listening to this, you know, at age 26, 27, 28, 29, like maybe they have their physical peak has passed, but the peaking, the post-peak can be such a slow, linear decline that you can actually peak later in life if you didn't actively peak at age 26, 27, 28, which really only professional athletes do.
Exactly. So I think the older you get, kind of what leading into what you just said, the older you get, as long as you're investing into the small, tedious things we talk about, as long as you do the small, tedious things, you're going to be okay.
All right. So let's talk about our friends who are now past the point of the early symptoms, who have plantar fasciitis. It's not a crippling thing, but it's real and it's affecting them. How does that manifest itself in terms of, you know, consistency and how often it could impact their running, and what are some of the things, knowing full well that each person is different, but what are some of the things that they can start doing to mitigate this while still living an active lifestyle like everyone who's listening to this podcast is trying to live?
I think for the most part, avid runners, they kind of know their body really well. So when they get to that point, the first thing I always say is, have you used new shoes you haven't tried? Sometimes the footwear, changing brands might not necessarily fit your foot type and you may not know it. And so that might be a catalyst for, is it making you land a little bit different and making you roll off a little bit different? So that's one of the first things I tell people to check if you're an avid runner. If you're more of a newer runner, I always say, okay, have you had an assessment? So if you go to your running store, usually they're pretty good about the technology now that they'll see like, you're a little bit more flat footed, a little bit higher arch. And so you might get the appropriate shoe wear. So that's something you could off the bat fix. But once you start feeling it and you have the shoe stuff figured out, I really think it's kind of like if you do a calf stretch and you feel your calf pulling pretty bad, you're probably stiff. So one, you probably should be stretching more, right? Another thing that I tell people is if you're done with your run or you've done a long run and you notice that your calf cramping or your feet cramp, you probably have maybe a strength problem. You probably have a little bit of a strength problem that might need to be addressed, right? So we talked about this before. If you can't do 30 single leg heel raises, you can't lift your heel 30 times,
I'm raising my hand. We're not recording the video. I'm raising my hand. I did it yesterday in preparation for this call.
Yes.
And I did.
Yes.
I didn't.
What was your number?
It wasn't 29.
Oh my gosh. I think I'm at like 26. Yeah, I was like 26. And I was like, okay, well, 25. Well, 25 is for someone who's not athletic. But for runners, I'm like, no, you should be hitting 30 plus easy.
Well, then I'm not. Then those. Breaking news here on the Rambling Runner podcast. Yeah. I'm not athletic. Shot to my ego. I got to change the name of this show.
No.
But I was at 22 and 24, respectively.
So you might just have to do a little bit more. Imagine. So if you have stiff toe, you have a little bit of foot weakness, it might take just doing small training errors where you run too many miles too fast and boom, you start feeling some soreness and you're like, what's going on? So those are quick things.
All right, let me ask you this question. You mentioned before with the high arches and then the flat feet, how they basically have to approach it from different angles to get to the same result.
Right.
So with the stretching, is there a proper protocol and method to do this, time of day, so on and so forth? And does there get to a point where the stretching can be like picking a scab, so to speak, with the issue where all of a sudden you're now inflaming it because you're doing too much of it? Or, you know, we've all been in those situations where you have an injury and like every 5 seconds we're like, how does it feel now? So like, is there a point where you get not only diminishing returns, but all of a sudden you've crossed the bell curve and now you're going down where more stretching all of a sudden means more harm?
I will say that is definitely way, and I've seen this many times with the patients that I see, but more than often, this will happen with people who are flat-footed and have very hypermobile feet. So flat feet, their ankles, yeah, they might be a little bit stiff, but they have like a lot of range. And I'm like, you probably should not stretch your calves out that much. A general rule of thumb, people who have pretty high arches tend to be on the stiffer side. So they can stretch, and stretching is actually beneficial for their feet because their feet are a little bit more rigid. But I would say for the people who have very low arches and they don't feel a stretch in their calf, them stretching their calf, it can be detrimental because you're just overstretching a structure that doesn't want to be stretched. It actually needs more structure and stability.
All right. For folks who are experiencing but prolonged issues with plantar fasciitis, from a running footwear perspective, let's talk about this and how much, not only stack height, but kinds of cushioning, stability elements, and heel drop can play a part in mitigating some of these issues. I know Matt Klein over at Doctors of Running is talking a lot about his research with this exact same topic in terms of, like, you know, these sorts of issues with masters and older runners. And he has you know, he hasn't published some of his work yet, but he keeps kind of hinting at the fact that, like, he kind of recommends older runners have a little bit of a higher drop shoe than younger runners. Again, painting with a broad brush, depending on their own personal, you know, geometry and things like that. I'm sure alluding to what you said earlier in terms of, like, just the general stiffness that can happen later in life. So, running shoes. Let's talk about how they can or cannot affect some of these issues.
I will say this. Does anything close to a 0 millimeter drop shoe for plantar fasciitis is probably not helpful. Usually people, and you'll hear patients say, like, if I wear a kitten heel, this is for women or whoever, that, oh, I feel way better when I'm wearing heels. I actually prefer wearing heels when I have plantar fasciitis, which makes sense. If they're stiff, right, which tends, for the most part, stiffness is a big contributing factor for plantar fasciitis. If they're stiff, they don't have the range. You need about 10 degrees to walk of dorsiflexion. For running, you need almost full, you ideally want full 20. So if you don't have it, having a higher lift in the shoe actually takes tension off of the plantar fascia when you're rolling off. So I would say, yes, that makes sense. I think that's what you're alluding to with Matt Klein, with the higher, the older patients, they might need a little bit more of, yes. So I completely agree with that.
Because he was talking, he's brought up a lot of times, and I think the most recent time I heard him mention it, they have a really good YouTube channel, Doctors of Running. They do a lot of shoe reviews, and they have a good podcast as well. He was talking about the Metaspeed Plus, Sky Plus, and Edge Plus, and talking about how he would recommend for some of his older runners the Edge Plus because it had a 9 or 8 millimeter drop, where the Sky Plus had a 4 or 5 millimeter drop. And for them, in terms of, it was a potential differentiator.
I completely agree with that. So, and it kind of just makes sense. Structurally speaking, if you're older, you tend to have more degenerative problems anyways. Why make it harder for you to run and risk the risk of having this 6 month to 1 year injury when you just might be better off with a higher heel? That's why the rocker shoe was so popular at some point, because that generally helped with plantar fasciitis as well. You don't have to push off your toes so hard and contract the fascia. So there's that.
Right. And we say rocker shoes. Hoka is a big one on this. Yes. They've been putting out rocker shoes for a long time. Another shoe that has a heavy rocker is the ASICS Glide Ride. I think the Glide Ride 3 recently came out and it's getting rave reviews. And sometimes you see that rocker, it's like it kind of has a stability element within it. Some people like that. Some people don't. I will say the Glide Ride 3 because it kind of has a Fresh Foam Blast Plus on the top level, which is very soft. I have Fresh Foam Blast Plus right here.
There you go.
In the ASICS Nimbus 24, which I can tell you is incredibly soft. This shoe is too soft for me. I just panned this shoe in a recent episode with Tommy Runs. That's why it's next to me over here on the table.
That's kind of what I recommend my patients. So patients who are a little bit on the flatter side or on the very high side, to both extremes, they both benefit from that because it just makes their foot less work hard. And I'm like, you have to think of it. Most runners were a little bit intense with their training. So telling someone they can't run, right, is like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to train? And I'm like, well, it might hurt, but if you can get through some of your training with just changing your footwear, maybe that might not be traditional to what most people run in, but might help you. I mean, great place to start.
All right. We're going to put a pin in that. We're going to get back to that in a second. How about softness of the midsole? Is that a factor to consider?
I think, again, depending on your, if you have a pretty normal size arch, I think you would be okay with soft. Flat foot, you need way more structure and stability. High arches, you need more stability. So I think it also depends on what you're comfortable. It's kind of like a pillow when people tell me, like, oh, what kind of pillow should I wear? And I was like, whatever your foot likes. If your foot does not feel good with the first few steps you're in a shoe, it's not the right shoe for you.
Oh, so you should be able to tell pretty quickly.
You should be able to tell pretty quickly. And I just went to a store. I was trying to get new trail shoes. And the second I put them on, I was like, nope. I already
Which
know
ones?
This is not going to work.
Know. I'm no, such a shoe
I
guy.
I can't.
Which it, ones? It was Come a, on. They're not going to sponsor the show anyway.
It was the Ultras. I got Ultra Pair. I don't remember which one it was, but again, there's 0% drop. But
Was it the new racer, the Mont Blanc?
No, I tried on the Mont Blanc. Shout out to the Mont Blanc. Those things were legit.
I heard the Ultras a disaster.
The which one?
The Mont Blanc upper, I heard, is a disaster. But I heard the midsole is good.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. All right. Ultra makes really good trail shoes. And I've liked the Escalante in the past. However, they are zero drop. So they will provide you a high stack in certain cases, but it's still zero drop in any shoe.
Yeah, zero drop for anyone who has plantar fasciitis, Achilles tendonitis, not the shoe for you. You need a little bit of a lift.
Well, let me ask you this then. Why would barefoot walking in the house be okay for people with plantar fasciitis if zero drop shoes are not okay?
In my head, I think, how much are you walking in your house, right? So
me, all the time. I work at home, okay, and I take care of my kids. I'm walking in the house constantly. So like, that's like the only place I walk.
So if you're like Matt and you walk a whole bunch at home, okay, you need to wear something.
I feel like 95% of my non-running steps are in the house.
Okay, see, I'm the opposite. When I'm at home, I'm like, maybe I'm cooking and standing, but I'm straight chilling, like computer, doing stuff, my phone. Like I'm not trying to move at all.
Oh, I got kids and dogs, and I'm walking all the time.
Okay, for parents and anyone with kids, okay, if you walk a lot, you might need oofus up in the house.
We need some house shoes.
yeah.
Okay.
No, but
get the all whites, so you won't be tempted to bring them outside.
Exactly. No, but I think for me, the reason why I say is it's almost like I'm kind of against, not against, for most people who don't have foot deformities, like an arch support or an insert, I'm totally against that because I think your foot really relies on the structure versus using all these muscles and foot intrinsics and your posterior tib and your calf to help support your foot. So it's kind of the whole concept. If you don't use it, you lose it. It's very true with a lot of things. But if you really do have like a structural problem with your foot, you're going to need a little bit more support.
All right. Now, let me ask you a question that wasn't on the list, but I wanted to ask, and we're going to get into the listener questions after this one. I'm holding up a shoe right now, A6 Metaspeed Sky. Just mentioned a second ago. It is the stiffest shoe on the market.
From a carbon plate eraser. Carbon plate, yeah.
As a carbon plate, I cannot bend it. Okay. Ooh. I have 7 different carbon plated shoes in this house. This is easily the stiffest. And I'm not the only one that has experienced that. So for people who enjoy taking out their race shoes or potential race shoes for, say, a workout in their long runs, like I do, right? I love the super shoes for the long runs and the workouts. Helps me recover the next day, right? Because you get these high stack foams. The foams are fantastic. You feel better the next day. That's great. However, a lot of them, especially this one, this sucker, which I cannot move unless I want to break it, is incredibly stiff. Now, does that play a role, if anything, in terms of this conversation, or is it something that can be disregarded?
I'm sure it can. And I think it depends on each case, right? So again, if I'm going to use the two extremes of people who tend to have plantar fasciitis, someone who is very low arched, right, and needs that support, running on something that's stiff might definitely flare it up, right? Unless they tend to be a 4-foot runner and they're on their toe and they don't have to go from heel to toe.
Right. And that's me. Yeah. Cause like basically like that's exactly what I do. I land midfoot, 4-foot. So like for me, like I have a friend who loves this shoe. He's a heel strider. So like for him, it kind of works as a rocker.
Yeah. Because it's so stiff. Right. It'll just kind of
so stiff. It just kind of fly through. For me, I can only wear this shoe if I'm flying.
Right. And you're on your toe. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way for me to really move the plate. Right. Otherwise, it's just so it's too still. Like I can't wear this at marathon pace.
No, you have to be sprinting. Yeah.
Right. So like I need to wear this at basically 10K pace or and less. So like this is a really good like workout shoe for me. It is not a good marathon shoe for me. Whereas like the Puma Deviate Elite or even the Vaporfly, which definitely gets like kind of like in the middle of the road from a flexion standpoint with the plate works just fine with a long run for me. Where that one like my left foot fell asleep in that shoe when I was running.
I have a flatter foot, so I would be like my cringing. I'm like, oh, my feet hurt just thinking about me being in that shoe. I don't know.
I said, yeah. What voice is that exactly? Is that a was that an impression or was
that was my inner Jess voice? Like, what is going on here?
I like that. All right, so I sent you the questions from the people on Instagram.
Yes.
So we have them here. Are there certain ones that you want to hit in terms of order, or do you just want me to throw you at them? Little like, you know.
You can throw them out. I think I have those for each of them. Yes.
Okay. Tips and tricks for hot summer runs. Just kidding. I I already responded to that one. Smalls 26.2. Miguel. Last episode, Allison Stables, Corinne Malcolm, whole episode on it. Go check it out. It's really good.
That's awesome.
I'm just playing around. All right. I'm just going to go in order here. I should have read these ahead of time because there's probably best order doing it. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go to this one because you just kind of hinted at it.
Okay.
Getting custom orthotics versus buying one over the counter / not getting orthotics at all, I guess, is the other option here.
If you have extremely low arches or extremely high arches and you are suffering from plantar fasciitis, you might need custom orthotics because over the counter is not going to provide the support that you need for your foot. Most of the over the counters for someone who has a very, I would say, quote unquote, traditional foot, moderate arch, enough support. And if you're using an over the counter support, in my mind, you want to get to the point where you're training yourself and you're not using any insert unless you have a custom orthotic. So that would be the answer for that.
All right. Mary C. Rojas asked a question, which I think we've already touched on. What's the best prevention? What's the best thing to do if I'm in the middle of training? We kind of already talked about the prevention, right?
Yep. Do the tedious, annoying stretches. Take care of your feet.
There you go. All right. Let's see here. Oh, one of our poor people who have the vampire but struggled for years. What's the best relief besides taping and stretching? So we didn't talk about taping. They already do some of the stretching. And we've already touched on a lot of this stuff, but how would you address this person specifically?
If this person came in and said, I've had years of plantar fasciitis pain, I kind of start getting worried. I'm like, one, has anyone looked at your running gait? Is there things that we can try to change there off the bat? If you keep suffering from it, the root of the problem has never been fixed. So he might not. And if he's gone to PT and it's not helping, well, he might definitely need a shoe.
It's a she.
Shoe.
It's a she. How dare
a
you?
She. I'm
how
sorry.
Dare you?
I'm sorry.
How dare you just assume? It's a she, Minnesota running mom.
Okay. I'm looking at you, so I'm just, you know. Okay. But if.
I did not submit all the questions. No, I'm not.
Okay. But if someone is having like this chronicity of pain, I'm thinking, okay, heel spur is usually one of the last things I think about. But if it's a reoccurring thing, are they having a heel spur? Is a heel spur causing all these things? So you definitely would have to get, for sure, having an appointment with a podiatrist and getting all these other like outside of the box diagnosis cleared out. I mean, if it's really bad and chronic too, this is on the spectrum. I don't know if she's had it, how chronic it is, but for people who don't do well with conservative treatment, you're going to need the whole like local injection or cortisone injection or something like that. But ideally you don't want to do that. So.
All right. So she's been dealing with it for years. Obviously, as you mentioned, the root of the problem has not been fixed, or if it has been fixed, it keeps coming back. So who does she contact?
I think so this is the tricky part, and this is not to make any therapist feel bad. Not every physical therapist is well-versed in running.
So fair. And that's perfectly fair, right? Like if a wrestler came to you and said, hey, I'm experiencing shoulder pain, you might be like, well, I don't even know what freaking moves you're doing. So how am I supposed to know?
Right.
You know, it's like,
right.
I mean, the kind of sport you're doing is important.
Yeah. I feel very uncomfortable with martial artists, like, you know, Taekwondo. And so I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't even know the moves. Right. So I think finding the
and
right therapist.
Especially when they're sitting there in your office, right? They're like giving you the lingo of their sport. You're like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
I don't know what that means.
Already
I remember
applied.
Talking to a PT
that
about this. He's like, I got into running. This was him talking. He's like, people were using words and I didn't know what that meant. Like, they're like, oh, I did a workout today. He's like, well, I came from like the strength training world. Because I thought workout meant like they were lifting weights. No, they're on the track. He's like, the lingo was so different. It took him like 3 years to like get it down. He was like working with his colleagues. Like, this person said this. What does that mean?
Yeah.
So this is an important step.
I do think so. Definitely researching and asking your runner friends or running stores. Usually they'll always have a therapist that they're like, hey, this therapist works with a lot of runners because this person's going to take the time to look at your gait, to look at your feet, to look at all these things that are important to running. So just finding the right provider for that, for sure.
All right. You mentioned a second ago. This is a great question from Ruby. Differentiating between PF and heel fracture versus other things.
Okay. Plantar fasciitis, typical sharp pain in the morning. It generally tends to go away during the day. If you have a calcaneal fracture, if you were to squeeze your heel and you have pain, you have a fracture. If you have pain with every step and it's sharp and it's swollen and doesn't go away, you probably have a fracture. Different from like posterior tib tendonitis, it's in a different place. It's on like the inside of your arch. What else is out there? There's so many things out there.
What about heel spurs?
Heel spur will kind of feel like plantar fasciitis. So this is kind of where I go. The only way you're really going to be able to differentiate is if the conservative treatment is not working.
All right. So when is the cortisone shot counted as conservative, or is that more drastic?
No, that's more drastic. So if the stretch you've done weeks of stretching, you're strengthening, you've changed your footwear, and you're still having pain, you might need to get checked out for a spur or something like that.
Okay. All right. And tell my father-in-law. He has plantar fasciitis. I'm not sure if he did any of these things.
You need to go over there and stretch out his big toe.
He did. His wife says he didn't. They live across the street from me. I'm not throwing shade. I'm not judging. I'm not saying who's right or wrong.
Matt, you need to go over there and stretch out his big toe. Do it for him.
Let me show you the half lunge big toe stretch.
There you go.
It is a funny looking thing. It works.
It works.
It's weird.
Yep. Toe yoga. Saying,
it's weird.
Everyone Google toe yoga.
My dog looks at me. His ears kind of like go up like, what's going on? What are you doing over there?
Our dogs.
He's hysterical. All right. Let's see here. All right. We've touched on a couple of these. Some of these are a little repetitive, which is totally understandable because a lot of people deal with the same things. All right. Here's a good one. Is there a link between PF and Achilles tendonitis? I've had Achilles tendonitis for 2 years after bad PF.
Yes. So if you think of the root of the problem for plantar fasciitis, which tends to be a mobility problem or strength problem, right? And it kind of directly is correlated with the calf. If you tend to have stiff ankle or a weak calf and it's stressing out the fascia, it's going to eventually stress out the Achilles tendon. Or it could be vice versa. People who have Achilles tendonitis tend to develop plantar fasciitis. So it's like brother and sister, cousins.
Cousins. Hopefully we can separate these cousins so you don't see each other very often.
Yeah, we don't want you can say, those cousins.
That one's over there. That one's over here. They don't see each other anymore. And
you like talking
related.
About the cousins. Those are the cousins you want to talk about, but not necessarily see all the time.
Oh, I feel like this is getting shockingly personal.
I love my family. Not my cousins.
Your cousins are great. They're all fantastic.
They're all great.
They're sponsoring this episode.
That's right. I'm going
to give a shout out to them in the intro. I think that is about it, which is thank you everyone who was submitting questions. That was very well done. I guess the last thing is, I guess surgery, right? Is it surgery kind of the last option? And what does that even entail?
Oh my God. I hope no one ever gets surgery. Outcomes are 50%. 50% it works, 50% it doesn't. So let's all pray for anyone out there who don't let last resort. Last resort. That is, you've tried everything for months, years, and nothing's helping. And at that point, and you've done the cortisone shot, and that's still not helping. It could be also, I've had a few people who, I've had podiatrists send me patients, plantar fasciitis, and it's actually posterior tibial nerve irritation, not plantar fasciitis. So that's another diagnosis that might need to get addressed.
Posterior tib nerve stuff.
Entrapment.
That is not an enjoyable PT experience.
No. And
I had a PT who thought I had that. It wasn't. It was a bone bruise.
Ooh.
Which was an unfortunate situation for me because what is needed to deal with the PT nerve impingement or whatever.
Yeah.
Was the exact opposite of what you would want for a bone bruise in that area.
Right, yeah.
So basically the bone bruise just kept getting worse and worse as he was digging in with like the metal tool to release the nerve.
Scraping.
I was like, this really hurts. He goes, it's supposed to hurt. Because it probably does for people who have posterior nerve issues.
Yeah, it's a nerve issue.
So like after like a month, I'm like, I can't even walk anymore. I'm on crutches.
No.
Like, is this still part of the plan? He's like, No, that's not part of the plan anymore. We've now diverging wildly from the point of the podcast, but no, I didn't have to bring that up.
But I will say this. If anyone is having like the inside of their heel hurts and they get burning, zappy, you probably have a nerve problem, not plantar fasciitis. So there's that.
That's good to know. All right. The PF talk is over. Just Mena, a month from now, we're going to talk about it now because in a month, it will have passed before our next episode. You're going to be doing some cool stuff. You're part of a bunch of cool stuff in the LA, Northern LA area. Tell us all about it.
There's a lot of things happening in LA. Where do I start? There's a few track races coming out here. I think we talked about the Tracksmith 5000 Twilight Series is going to be out here. So I'll be out there with a whole bunch of the community people doing those races. One is in July. The other one's in August at Occidental College. Great track. They host a whole bunch of distant carnivals.
That's a beautiful place too. I played in a college basketball tournament out there one year. That was great. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That was a fun spot. I like the Oxy College. They're a rival school. I went to Whittier, which is a rival. So, it's a little beast there, but
their gym left a lot to be desired. Their campus, beautiful.
Beautiful. Old school campus, beautiful campus. So I'll be doing that. And I think this weekend, this podcast might have come out already. There's like Adidas is hosting a track meet. So there's going to be a lot of community clubs out there with their 4x4 teams and then running the 4, 8, 1200. So that'll be fun. Yeah.
So when's the last time you did 12 and a half hard laps on a track?
College. 2011 was the last time I've done that. Yep. Yeah, so
12 and a half laps, people. That's a 5K. I don't care what your GPS watch says. I don't care. It doesn't measure the track correctly. It's 12 and a half laps. It's freaking measured ahead of time. Yeah. I tell some of my athletes when I do like a time trial 5K, they're like, well, my watch said it was 3.27. I'm like, it's 12 and a half laps. Just what it is.
I'm really nervous because I haven't ran a track event since college, right?
Don't go up too hard, Jess Mena. Please, for the love of God, do not bust it in the first 200 meters.
I know. It's gonna be fun because I think the pressure will be down since you're going to have all your community people there,
Think running in front of your friends provides less pressure? That's adorable. That's fantastic. I've never heard that opinion before. I've always experienced the exact opposite.
Now we're going to have people like, what pace are you going? Okay, we're going to go here. Okay, we're going to say that pace.
Right, because no one cares what their friends think. This is a very good point.
Hey, I don't know. I guess I'll find out. I haven't ran on the track in a long time. Maybe my competitive side will come out. Maybe my fun side will come out. I have no idea. I guess we'll find out. I have no idea.
I'm excited. Yeah. Remember, just aim to pass people in the last 300 meters.
Last 300 meters.
I feel like if you do that on the track in a 5K, again, I haven't run a lot of 5Ks, but I've coached a lot of people who've done them. And on the track, that if you aim to pass people in the last 300 meters, and that's the whole goal of the race, with the idea of like, we're not completely sandbagging the first 11 laps, it kind of sets you up for success versus the whole like, I am hanging on for dear life. What just passed me? Holy crap, that was a human type feeling.
I mean, low key, I'm definitely going to train for it. I'm just not going to tell anybody. So,
good thing, because this is part of the podcast. It's not, so that's totally fine.
I'm going to hide by Strava so people can't see what I'm doing.
Private Strava. That's it.
Exactly.
So, what are you going to do to prepare?
I don't know, honestly. What should I do? You're the coach.
Well, I think you got to do a couple things, right? First of all, you've been doing a lot of trail running, which is fun. And definitely exciting, and doing a lot of group runs. Also, super fun and exciting, which means you probably also haven't really hit that VO2 max consistently.
No.
Right? So, and especially with your weather right now, it's getting hot. It's going to be hard. If you're hitting VO2 max in your workouts, which you should, because you're going to be hitting it in that race, I would say for your VO2 max workouts, whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, not really 5, but 2 to 4 minute reps, I would suggest some walking rest so that you're able to get back at it, especially the week of the race, so that you can practice getting out at race pace off of a dead stop and not gunning it right from the starting line. So if we're talking about this, maybe you do like a ladder workout where you're doing, you know, 3 by 3 minute, 3 by 2 minute, 5 by 1 minute with a 1 minute walk in between. I think that way you're kind of hitting that interval pace type feel with close to that pretty kind of 5K pace, maybe a little faster. And then you're going from there with the idea being that, you know, the first mile of the 5K, but outside of the kind of jumping off the line, should feel strong but controlled.
Okay. I'm taking notes. I'm 100% taking notes.
There you go. The second mile should feel like you're kind of questioning yourself of like, did I go too fast? Did I?
Yeah.
I might have gone too fast. Yeah. Right. If you're not questioning yourself in the second mile, then you probably should speed up a little bit. If you're like, I am way going too fast. I'm definitely going too fast. Then take it down a notch.
Okay.
You know, fifth gear, put it back in fourth gear. Don't.
Great.
No, nothing drastic. And then be prepared. The last mile is going to be tough. This way it goes.
Yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
It's the way it goes. Okay. Be optimistic about it and embrace it. Right? It's going to hurt no matter what. So you might as well have a positive attitude. And then just think about, hey, then you have to figure out what works best for you. Some people are best going inside, right? So they go completely internal. They focus on their thinking and they have to focus on keeping that right to stay in the moment and focus. Other people, and I'm in this group, especially in the last, I need to be that way in the second mile. In the third mile, I need to be external. Okay, who am I passing? Who do I not want to get passed by?
Ooh.
And I need to go, full external because I'm not feeling super comfortable at this point. So I can't be inside. I need to be outside. So I'm not thinking about that. I'm going full external. All right. I got these three people ahead of me. I'm going to go get them. I got this guy behind me who I just passed. I know he's lingering. I want to keep him off my back. And then that way I can kind of, you know, again, every person's different, but I think kind of understanding how you fit into
it. I don't know who
it.
I am yet.
I think you are an obvious external person here.
I think I am. I get pissed. Oh my gosh. So quick thing before trail run.
And if you do embrace the anger. Anything to get it rolling in that last 800.
This last trail run, they didn't have the marker for the turnaround. And I'm pissed. I was like, where the hell is the turnaround? And I ran the fastest downhill I've ever ran before. But, so maybe it is me. And this girl was so mad. She passed me right at the last second. I didn't hear her. I was so mad. But I shook her hand.
Hey, if you have to embrace the hate to finish strong, you know, it isn't. And then just do it.
You're not hurting anybody.
You're not hurting anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's just go for it.
Yeah, I'm just going to use it. I'm going to use that to get me through. But, oh my gosh, thanks for the tips. I literally was, while you were saying that, I was like, yeah, I haven't done any of this. I definitely need to do this. So thank you, coach.
Before you do that workout, in your warm-up, again, the 2 to 3 mile warm-up as normal, make sure you do, you know, 4 20-second strides.
Yeah.
Right? And even if you have to take a break after the warm-up, just reset. It doesn't have to be like, you're doing warm-up and just roll right into the workout. If you have to take a second to reset, do it.
Yeah.
No problem. Let it go. You do the cool down anyway. It's totally fine. Yeah.
No, great. I'm going to have to go to a track workout.
But you have to practice on the track a little bit before you do this. If you're running on the track, you got to practice on the track.
Yeah, I need to go. I need to go to track. So I might have to go join someone on the track.
Also, don't worry about pace while you're doing these workouts.
Oh.
Okay. Don't worry about pace. You don't know what your 5K pace is on the track in the heat.
No.
So what's the point of practicing, all right? Practicing your pace, all right? Go out, complete the workout, okay? Mm-hmm. Look at your pace afterwards.
Oh.
Right? You're going to be roughly aware of like, all right, am I tanking? Do I have energy to do this? Okay? Being aware of your pace oftentimes is just going to sabotage the effort. Either it's going to mean a negative sense of like, oh, I'm not running fast enough. I should be faster than this. And all of a sudden you're tanking your workout because you're in your own head. Or you're faster than you think, but you all of a sudden you have a governor on your effort because you're like, all right, no, I was going to go out at like, I was going to do all these things at like, you know, in minute 40 seconds per lap or a minute 35 seconds per lap. I just did an 87 second lap. It felt fine, but I should probably hold back. No. Just run. If you want to check yourself at the 100 meter mark, just to make sure that you didn't run it in 14 seconds, fine. But after that, after like the first couple reps, and then, you know, you kind of get the feeling and you just let it go. Because ultimately, you want to get a feeling of how does this feel? And hey, who's this? You don't know. We're such bad judges of like, how fast are we right now? We don't know. We don't know.
That's so true.
So just run hard. Just run hard. You're going to get the stimulus either way.
Damn. I'm going to have to tag you on my workout and see how it goes. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Matt.
Instagram. We're doing Instagram Live. Jess Mena. Yeah. At the Pomona Pisser track.
Yeah. The blue track. Oh my gosh. That'd be great.
All right. This has been so much fun. If you like this episode, and how could you not, go back and check out our monthly podcast with Jess. We've talked about size stitches, we've talked about strength training, and in July we will talk about something else. But either way, these are super informative and fun. Jess, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thank you. Hope to talk to you guys soon.
Jess, thank you so much for coming on this show. This was an absolute blast, as it always is. Jess is the best. That's it. She's the best. So, Jess, thank you so much for coming on the show. And thank you for listening to the Rambling Runner podcast. It means so much to me. Have a great day and happy running.
This has been a production of Rambling Runner podcast. This podcast is produced by David Margetti of In Post Media. Thank you to Meta P for the music. His song, Righteous Path, featuring Rex Mayhem and Chip Fu, is produced by Symphonic Bang.
Yeah. Enterprising in my surroundings, I'm finding the quietest estates these days. Just representation of storm brewing, amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change. I'm trying to show this industry.